Part 1. Moriarty's Death Mask. From the account of John Watson, M.D. As Sherlock Holmes and I met at the breakfast table on that fateful 4th May, 1902, not even the detective genius of my life's friend could warn that it marked the final period of our long partnership, and an end to my days at 221 B. Baker Street forever. Whilst I recall the macabre significance of that date on the calendar, Holmes remained absorbed in the Sunday edition of the Times. A policeman had been murdered in St. Pancras. I helped myself to Mrs. Hudson's excellent kedgeree and waited for some sign of my companion's mood. He refolded the newspaper, set it aside for his clippings book later, and reached for the butter dish. "I apprehend that you wish to discuss something, Watson," Holmes noted, as he carefully buttered another round of toast. "You have twice made that characteristic cuff-tugging gesture, which indicates your intention to broach some difficult subject. You have sugared your tea, which you only do these days on occasions wherein you are perturbed. And you continue to glance at the brown paper package which arrived yesterday from George Noon's Limited of Southampton Street, Strand, that you charmingly fancy to have concealed from me beneath your Aberdeen coat, beside the elephant's foot walking stick stand." I put down my fork and chuckled. "I should know better after all these years, Holmes, than to try and surprise you," I confessed. "May I inquire if you have also discerned the topic I have been trying to broach?" Holmes completed his meticulous buttering. He broke off a corner of the toast and flicked it to the floor for the dog to devour, took a bite himself, then demonstrated again those keen powers of reasoning which readers of my annals have marveled at no less than I. "You have newsprint on your fingers, which means you have already consulted the Times broadsheet, yet the paper remained folded and had never been opened when I took it up. You therefore consulted the front page only, most likely the masthead, to confirm the date as one to which I might still be sensitive. You brought in the parcel while I was shaving, believing, as you often do, that the apparent clutter of our chambers would prevent me from noticing its presence. And you have new boots, which habitually you only purchase after you have received some financial windfall. From this I conclude that you wish to present me with the new edition of one of your accounts of our cases from the box of complimentary volumes forwarded by your publisher, but are unsure of how I might receive the gift if I am in a black mood." Holmes was, as usual, correct. Over the winter of 1901 and through Easter 1902, I had returned to chronicling my remarkable friend's exploits for the readers of the Strand magazine. However, I knew that my literary endeavors did not always commend the wholehearted recommendation of their principal subject. I shifted my coat and brought the heavy parcel to the breakfast table. "My recent serial has proved popular," I admitted. "Mr. Conan Doyle has arranged for a collected edition to be released to satisfy public demand."
"And the public must be satiated at all costs?"
"The truth must be served. On how many occasions has your work gone ignored, whilst the men you have assisted have been swathed in glory for their triumphs? How much has a broader dissemination of your methods shaped modern forensic investigations of criminal activity? I trust that as your friend I have some delicacy about how I present your activities to the world." I was cautious because Holmes did not entirely approve of the publication of his memoirs.